Our speaker today is Cameron Mullins. Cameron was born and raised in Dallas, Texas. He completed his Bachelor of Psychology from the University of Texas at Dallas and his Master's of Theology from Dallas Theological Seminary. He began volunteering with refugees in 2006 and officially started working with them in 2010. He and Caitlin founded For the Nations Refugee Outreach in 2011. He enjoys getting to know refugee families, having long theological discussions, and running all the ins and outs of nonprofit ministry. He and Caitlin have 5 children. Give it up for Cameron Mullen.
And one of my most favorite things to walk into when it comes to a speaking engagement. Thank you so much for having me real quick. Okay, just real fast. Who has been out to For the Nations? Anybody? Okay, perfect. The majority have not. So, you know, don't spoil anything. I love that I'm hearing the foam boiling down here as I'm talking. And the theme song that I walked up to, Ghostbusters, do you know the words to it? No, the first part. When there's something strange in the neighborhood, right? And so I love this intro song. Steve and I did not coordinate this, but this is what refugees are, right? Like they're strange, but they're in our neighborhood. So my name is Cameron Mullins, and let's see. My story starts really when I was about 21, because my wife and I, we started dating in high school. Usually I don't start the story here when I'm 18, but honestly, like some of you, like you're just a year or two older than 18. And so we started dating as seniors in high school, and then we thought we'd break up. And so then I went to UTD, and she went to A&M, and we said, we're going to break up. But then we're like, actually, this isn't going so bad. And so we said, let's try this long distance. So right now, if you're dating someone long distance, watch out, because you might start a nonprofit with them someday. And so anyway, she graduated early. And so we actually got married. We would have been, if we had gone to Criswell, we would have been in the married housing. Is there married housing here? No. Good. We would have been in it senior year because apparently I'm a catch. And so she graduated early. And so then when we were 21, she started teaching at an elementary school. She got her degree in early education teaching kindergarten. And up in Richardson. Now, quickly, raise your hand. Do you know where Richardson is? Yes. Okay, perfect. More people than have been out to For the Nations. All right, great. Well, it's up north. So just, I don't know how good you are at directions. I have, 5 kids. Not all of them are good at directions. But just north, which direction is north right now? Okay, I see hands going every way. Yeah, that's right. Okay, good. So it's all up north kind of that we're talking about. But we're 21, and she was telling me stories of her class, and she's like, "This is really weird, because there's like 22 kids, but 16 of them don't speak English." And I'm like, "Well, that's not." She's like, "But they don't speak Spanish either," and it's like, "Well, that's weird. What language do they speak?" She's like, "I don't even know. I haven't even heard of some of these languages before." So. A little girl named Sharifa came walking to class one day, and she had fallen down in a puddle. And that's when Caitlin said, "Hey," and it was cold outside. It was colder than today. Had fallen down in a puddle, accompanied only by her first grade sister. And she goes, "Hey, I think I'm going to buy her a jacket and take it to her house." And so she goes and she buys a jacket. She takes it there, and then. When she gets to the apartment, it's filled with all of this family. And it's not just, there's not just 2 kids. These 2 kids are the oldest, but there's 7 children in this house already. And they're in this apartment, but as she goes up, everyone else starts asking, all these little heads start popping out of apartments saying, "Miss Mullins is here, Miss Mullins is here." So then she goes and she does some research to find out like what's going on. And so in doing the research, she then comes busting into our 1-bedroom apartment. She goes, "Cameron, guess what? They're refugees." To which then my first response, and this is close to 20 years ago, my first response was, "Oh no, do we need to report them to the government?" because, and she lovingly said, "No, you idiot, that's not what a refugee is." And I said, "Well, what is a refugee?" And we didn't really know the answer back then, but the answer was a refugee is a permanently resettled person who is an invited guest by our government to come to America. By the way, this is just all the pre-setup for the real story. We learned more about it. There was lots of things I didn't know about refugees at the time. So let me just clue you in. And unfortunately, I wish I didn't have to say this. By this quick clue in right here to refugees, you're going to know more than 99% of people about refugees. So just give me one hot minute. All right, so refugees, the program started in the 1970s after the Vietnam War, when lots of Vietnamese people jumped on boats and they came over to America. And so then there's all these Vietnamese families that were initially adopted by like Catholic churches, which is why today there's lots of Catholic Vietnamese churches. And so then the government kind of stepped in the early 80s to say, hey, this is really kind of unregulated. We are not quite sure who's being helped and why. So we're going to start what's called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And what the Office of Refugee Resettlement does is that they said, hey, we have money for anyone that will bring people over, but they have to be a verified organization. And when the government says they have money to do something, there will always be people that pop up to say, we will take that money. And so so these organizations started, and they had just a few requirements. They had to bring them over, like in an airplane, refugees over, and the refugees were in refugee camps. Now, just real quick, because I don't have tons of time, and it's not that complicated to think of, but real quick, these refugee camps, what state do we live in? Thank goodness. Okay, great. I don't always get the right answer to those questions. So we're in Texas, that's right. And imagine that that the rest of the United States says, hey, we're coming to take you over. We actually don't think if you've lived in Texas or even know a Texan or have ever said y'all, we actually don't like you anymore. And so the rest of America says, hey, we're coming to take your land and take your, we'd rather you die, but you got to get out of here. So the rest of America is coming. So we're here in Dallas. Where do we run? Or what do we do? Some of us might say, hey, I'm going to go fight. But that's very few of us. Because most of us are like, oh, wait, how many are against us? The rest of America? I'm out of here. So then we're in Texas. Where do we run? Where? Mexico. Good. Some people say Canada. And then it's like, there's a lot of land you got to get through. You might make it, but it's going to be tough. And then some people say Oklahoma. And I'm like, you didn't understand the entire question to begin with. Okay, and so they go to Mexico, and there in Mexico, let's just say hypothetically, does Mexico want to? There's now like, I don't know, 20 million Texans that just showed up in Mexico. Does Mexico want to bring us all the way into like the center of their country? No. So they're going to call up the United Nations and say, "We got a problem. There's all these Texans here. We don't have money or resources for them. This is a big issue. UN, can you please help us?" UN says, "No problem. We're going to send you money." And you get to make some temporary places for these people. Okay, and so where would you build these temporary places for us Texans coming in? Okay, so would you want us to cut all the way across your country to get there? No, so you're going to build these temporary places as close as you can to the border. And then all of us Texans that get there, we're going to get there, and then we're going to sign up with them, and we're going to sit, and we're going to wait and so the refugees that are sitting in the refugee camps, what are they waiting for? Sorry, I love crowd participation. I can't help myself. What? Housing. Okay, good. They want housing, but it's there. Like the housing is there and some water is there. What are they wanting? What would you be wanting? What? Citizenship. Are you desperately looking for a Mexican citizenship right now? No. I'm always surprised, and it took me many years to figure out this answer. What everybody, and we would want it too, you just left your car and your money and your language and all the skills that make us valuable to go to college, to get jobs. You just had to leave all of that behind. Now you're in a completely new area where you can't speak, you can't talk, you don't have any access to your bank accounts. And what everybody is wanting is, have you seen the movie Sound of Music? It's old. Have you seen it? Okay, great. There's a last line at the end where Liesl turns to Maria and says, when do we get to go back home? If you had to run away from everything, and especially if you were kids and your parents were saying, don't worry, it's just going to be for a moment, just for a moment. We're just going to go over here. We have to leave everything behind. We're just going to stay here until this fighting stops, until all these problems go away. Like, and then don't worry, we're going to get to go back. We're going to get to go back. So you go and you sit and you wait. And as you're waiting, you hope for the fighting to stop or the problem to go away. But after enough time, after 6 months, after a year, after 5 years, after 35 years, this is when someone finally may have to come to you and say, like, this is where finally internationally it's declared, we're so sorry, but the house that you had, the car that you had, is gone. It was taken. The bank account you had was drained. Like, the school you went to doesn't exist anymore. There's no certificate. Like, there's everything that you had is gone. We're so sorry, but there's nowhere to go back to. So 99% of refugees will either go back into their home country or they will immigrate into the country. They will then say, okay, well, I guess I'll become a citizen of Mexico if Mexico allows that, if the country they run into allows that. Or 1% will be specifically hand-chosen by government and invited over to those countries, to more stable third countries like Australia, like England, or like the United States. And so from the beginning of the 1980s, America has brought over about 100 to 150,000 refugees every year. From what country? From all the countries we wouldn't want to visit in Africa and the Middle East and Asia. And so that's where it's like, so they're not running out of America. If they were running out of Somalia, they might run to Kenya. If they were running out of Iraq, they might run to Turkey. If they were running out of Burma, they might run to Malaysia. And all these places have refugee camps. Okay, so you get like the idea of the refugee camp, what they're there for. They're also meant to be temporary. They're not meant to be long-term cities. And so things like schooling and education and these things, it starts to just kind of evaporate and disappear. I didn't know any of that when my wife comes home when I'm 21 saying, hey, guess what? They're refugees. And so because of that, I said, do we need to report them? Unaware of that entire process that brought them there. All right. So if you know that story of how refugees are and that they are legal and permanent, I'm so sorry, but this puts you in a top type of upper 1% to 5% of who actually knows that information. And now you'll have to deal with that information the same way I've had to. I wasn't asking for it, but just fell into it. All right. So, okay. So then we're 21. She starts helping some kids. She realizes that these kids are already so far behind. They don't know the language. They don't know these things. So she starts having a class after school to help them in her public school up in Richardson. And so then the kids start coming just to learn their letters, shapes, colors, numbers, all the things that we teach our kids that you were taught that none of us have to pay for. We were all just taught it. Okay, and so then the weird thing is parents started to show up to this after-school class. Again, this is about 20 years ago. To this after-school class, and they would bring all these papers, and it was just whatever they had gotten in the mail. And they're like, boom, what is this? She's like, well, This is a credit card bill. You shouldn't have credit cards. You probably shouldn't have credit cards either, but we tell the refugees that. Here's your credit card bill. This one is a scam. This is your Social Security card. You got to keep that. This one's a Pizza Hut advertisement. So just kind of going through their mail. But then also what happened was that all of these parents were bringing all of these younger kids because who America chooses to come over is usually stable family units. That's why the idea of the solo refugee that's coming to take over or something like that. I don't know where this idea came from, but it's just not who America brings over. We bring over stable family units most of the time, people with education. It's the cream of the crop. She sees all these younger kids and she goes, you know what? We're going to have a preschool for these kids over the summer. And she and I, we didn't have any kids at that time. And what we didn't know now is that we had all the time in the world. So we could just spend summers because once you have children, you will have no time. This is some of the most time you'll ever have, which is why when a college kid says to me, I'm so busy right now, I just say, gosh, bless your heart. So So then she starts having a preschool, but she comes to me and she goes, hey, we're going to teach letters, shapes, colors, numbers to the preschoolers. She goes, but I'm also going to teach stories about Jesus. And I'm like, when? And she's like, every day. Now, I was in seminary across the street over here. And about half of these people were from Christian countries. About half were from Islamic countries. And my, what do you think I said to her when she said, I'm going to teach about Jesus to these little preschoolers? What do you think I said? Uh-oh. I said, I don't know if that's such a good idea. I think that they're going to get pretty mad at you because we're told we're not supposed to talk about things like that. And if you do, people will run away. You got to be sensitive to these things. So anyway, she goes, it'll be fine. They talk about God all the time. So she did. And at the end of the summer, she goes, well, Cameron, the moms all came up to me saying they got really mad at me. And I'm like, well, I'm not surprised because you were teaching them about Jesus and sending home like all these crafts and telling stories. She goes, no, no, no. They were mad because they said, Miss Mullins, why are you doing all these things for our children? Why don't you do them for us as well? I know. I was surprised too. So then she's like, so we got to start doing this. Let's move out of our one bedroom and start renting a house in the area. Now, if you haven't noticed, you and I, during this story, are kind of taking a third-person view to this. We're not making these amazing decisions of let's go help this person. We're kind of watching here from the side, and to some degree, we just have a ministry of yes, where it's like, okay, so let's go rent a house in the neighborhood that they live in. And then, and so then it's like, boy, I sure like the area that kind of we're in. It's a lot nicer than that. Okay, let's do it. Let's jump. And so we started renting a house. And so then one evening a week, about 8 women would come over to our house. Actually, she and I would have to go around and drive and pick some people up to bring them where they would learn English and learn Bible stories. And it was so, if you walked in and you saw that room, you'd say, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. 8 women from all mainly from Africa at that time. But they're all like learning English and bettering themselves, and they're getting to hear about Jesus, many of them for the first time, because what I was confused of was I kind of thought, oh, they were given a choice at some point of what to believe. And the answer was, no, they weren't. They were told one specific thing and told, if you even go and research outside of this, we'll kill you, or we'll ostracize you, or you won't be part of our family. So what education and learning about Jesus is actually giving people opportunities to say, hey, actually, let me tell you something. Let me tell you where my faith and my hope is. And what we actually get to tell them during this time is, hey, in America, I know you were looking for safety. I know you were looking for an easy life. And the truth is, neither of those are here. What your heart was actually looking for, and what God has brought you all the way across the ocean to hear, is that Jesus loves you and that he cares about you just as much as he cares about me. And that the thing that you were looking for the whole time was not America, is that it's actually Jesus. And it's the same thing that we're looking for here. So let me tell you about the hope that we have in him. And let me tell you about that not just once, but literally every time I see you. So if you looked into the one room, you'd see that. But then if you looked over here to the dining room, you would have seen 20 children going crazy because it's all the children of the 8 women. And so 20 is an understatement. And so that's where we had to start asking some friends, like, oh my gosh, these kids are going crazy. Can you please come and just hang out in my house in the dining room one evening a week with them? Now, of course, I was in seminary at this time. So I would come in with my little briefcase. Yeah, I had a briefcase. I'd come in with my little briefcase. I'd look over. I'd see the women in there. I'd say, aw. I'd see the kids over there with some of our friends just going like, and I'd be like, yeah, like, boy, that seems busy. And I'd be like, I got to go study. Because you see, I had a plan. I was an associate youth pastor at an upper middle class church here in Dallas, and I was on a track. And that track made sense. I got good grades. I was in seminary. I was doing everything I needed to do. I had connections and things like this. I had a plan of what I was going to do. And this, even though, while cool, was not a part of what my plan was for what was going on. So then I would go back to my room at this time and study and read and do all the things that, you know, like I'm supposed to do, right? Like to get to the next stage that I needed to get to. All right. So then one evening a week, kids would walk over and we'd just pop open our garage and kids would come walk in and we'd help them with homework. And they'd be told, like, in a Bible story, they'd hear a Bible story. And then also, like, we'd give them a snack. during it. And we were in the neighborhood so they could get to us. All right, kind of simple, and it would have just stayed there as a hobby, except, and to now shorten this, as I'm always doing, the older I get, the longer I talk. And so then the eight women became 15, which became 20, which became 30. The kids, to such a degree that one time there weren't enough spots, and so a fight broke out at our house. And that's when Caitlin came to me and said, hey, guess what? I got to quit my job. And I said, I don't know if you heard earlier, but I'm in seminary and I'm a part-time associate youth pastor. How exactly are you going to quit your job? And she goes, I'm just going to raise support, just like a missionary does. And I said, I don't think that's such a good idea. And she goes, I don't think it'll be a problem. And so then in about 3 months, she had raised her support and her school. She became a bridge between the refugee community. And I said, and so then we started doing these programs like afterwards. And I was kind of watching, and there was one evening I kind of came out and I said, Caitlin, you know, you really need a guy who can help you because you're really helping women and children. And there's all these men, and she had this dinner in this apartment complex. All these men came out, and I was like, you got to find someone who can help you with this. And I was like, I'll be praying for you, like, to find this person because it's clearly a need, and it's clear right there. And then this guy named Malo, I just saw him 2 days ago. A guy named Malo goes, hey, Mr. Mullins, how's your family? And for some reason for me, that's when it hit. Oh, I can do this. It's literally right here. I know I had these stories of like, yeah, this is this thing that you're doing and it's super cool and I approve of it and yay and go you. I'll even tell other people about you. But this idea of like, but I have plans, but the need is right here. And so this is actually what I probably shouldn't call you Bobby from the stage, but this is what Bobby and I, is that there are needs all around us, but we have plans and we have goals. And those are great. Like I'd be concerned if someone's like, I have no plans or goals for the future. It's like, okay, like maybe you should. Like it's great to have plans and goals, but at the same time, there are needs all around you. And part of, maybe you're like my wife, and I just had to censor a whole lot of jokes. Maybe you're like my wife. Maybe you're always jumping in and like trying new things and doing new things and pushing against walls. Maybe you're like that. But maybe you're more like me, and you're like, I had plans, but I can see this need right there. And if you're more like me, what I hope that you hear this morning and that you think about as you're going through your education process and these things is saying, okay, but I can't forget to look up and look at like, but what's actually going around right around me? What are the needs that are in my community right now? Not the needs I just know of or the needs I even see on paper, but what's actually going on right beside me that maybe I can step into, even though like I'm not the most equipped. I don't know anything about refugees. People say, how many languages do you speak? And I say, not that many. Like, I only speak English. So just don't be scared to take those steps. I mean, and if you're not scared enough to wear a Halloween costume, like many of you are today, then I hope you continue this passionate desire of going into communities to change them. All right, so just to fast forward to the very end, so currently, today, it became more and more, and then other people started calling us saying, hey, we want to come work with you. And we're like, what? Like, you have to raise your own support. We ended up starting our own nonprofit in 2011 because we were looking for, like, what can we let that lets us mix both education and evangelism together and helping both old and young people all the time. And there just wasn't anything that existed. And so we started our own nonprofit in 2011. And currently today, I think we're going to serve about 850 people today, providing, and we do that on about a daily basis, providing adult education, teaching English 4 days a week, 45 minutes of English, 20 minutes of Bible, 45 minutes of English, which means that for 32 weeks of the year for adults, which means our adults get to hear the gospel 128 times over the course of a year. We still run about 40% Islamic. And then we provide childcare and preschool for the kids as the adults are in classes. And then over the summer, we'll serve about 650 to 700 children a day. And after school, we'll serve about 100 a day. But after school doing homework, and then also learning reading. But none of it is any different than what the original thing was, which is just like, oh, I can help. Like, I have my degree in theology, not early education. And so if you have early education or thinking about education, boy, do I got an idea for you. And so anyway, okay, great. I'm out of time here for me talking. Let's transition to the next part. I might still have some monologuing to do, but it's my least favorite form of communication. Okay, and why I wanted them is because they've been out to For the Nations. They served for how many weeks did you guys serve?
I'm serving right now.
You're in it right now. Perfect. Okay, great. Like you'll be there today. Like we could ride back there together. Okay, great. Me too. Okay.
Yeah, and we'll let you just keep the mic. Yeah, so let's give it up for Cameron again. Okay, so the way this normally works with our panels is I'm going to be checking our Discord, so if you have any questions specifically, but I do want to spend some time talking to you guys. Actually, Madison, why don't you switch chairs with me? That way I can see everybody at the same time. And just hear about your experiences starting off. I know, Hise, you took the class, and the class, I'm not sure, we keep kind of referring to it, but this is... For the Nations is our partnership with the local learning and service class. All of our students take that. Dr. Worthington at the moment is the teacher for that, but that is a very practical class, and you spend some time talking about local learning and service, and you spend a lot of time at For the Nations, which is a real positive experience for our students. So I know, Hise, you've already taken the class. Madison, you're in the midst of the class. I'm curious about you two, your kind of... I guess thoughts and feelings, maybe the first time you went out and like, you know, like obviously this is a different type of class than, you know, we're just like at the seminary, or at seminary, I've heard that word too many times,
sorry.
At the college and you're in a classroom, but this is like you're actually going out to Richardson, you are, you know, like doing ministry, serving people, sent to serve. So what was your feelings and thoughts, you know, the first few times maybe that you went out to For the Nations?
Yeah, so when it came to doing this, we have to come in prepared, as in, you know, not just like prepared like, oh, I'm going to go run a mile or something, but like prepared like we're going to serve other people, which means that we need to work on our heart. So... And Dr. Worthing does a good job with teaching us, like, what are some really good ways to love on people, and it's to see them for who they are, not assuming what they need, because it's very easy to do that. It's very easy to look at a person, kind of, like, judge them by their cover, but it's like, you don't know what their story is, and so why would you assume? And so it's like, the best way that I can love someone is by seeing who they are, intentionally listening to them and asking them questions about their life instead of me already answering those questions without them, you know? And so we were looking at two books about servanthood, and this also kind of just it's cool because, you know, we're taking intercultural communication and also global learning and service, and those two classes with this local learning and service class work together, like hand in hand, to help us get prepared to serve other people who are not like us, in the sense that we don't have the same culture, right? We don't have the same language. And so it's like teaching us, like, okay, how can we be loving, respectful, intentional, and just have like a heart to serve them? And so to the point, you know, whenever we get there into serving them, I served with the kids. I served the kids with Paola, who was another person in the class with me. And these kids are adorable. they crack me up. They're funny. I mean, the one time a kid sneezed on my head when I was trying to fix their, you know, when I was trying to tie their shoes for them. It was a great experience. But that part alone, I'm just kidding. No, it was awesome. Like these kids, like, you know, I was in the room with Miss Erica. And she's a really good teacher. Like, she knows how to, like, grab these kids' attention, show them the gospel, and like illustrate, you know, the Bible story, you know, going from like Old Testament to the New Testament. It was just amazing to see that. And just like seeing all the work that she had had to prepare as its teacher, like I was talking with her about it, and I'm like, man, that's seems kind of exhausting in some ways, you know? And so when I got there, I also wanted to serve her because, you know, she's putting a lot of the work. She's going to be there, you know, every day at For the Nations, and I'm only going to be there once in the week. And so it's like, what can I do to help her? If it's like to fill up water with her, like with their like water bottles, and like I'll do that, you know? But yeah, it was just cool to learn from her and also learn from these children, right? And one of the things that I learned from them is like, man, they have joy, you know, like they're in a new environment, you know, but they have joy. And like, it kind of brought me back to like when Paul is saying like, I'm rejoicing in my suffering, right? In his imprisonment. And with these kids, it's that they're just in a whole nother world, it seems like, you know, being here in America, not knowing the language, not knowing a lot of what's going on, but they're doing the best with what they can. And so they've kind of inspired me to have joy in the midst of a new season and something that's just different than what I'm used to. And so, yeah, I'm just like filled with gratitude for that experience. And so it was cool.
Yeah. And Madison, you're in the midst of it right now. So what are kind of your thoughts, as especially like you're kind of stepping into a new environment, a new situation?
Yeah. So with taking the class, who would have thought that the things that you learn are practical? sometimes, you know, you go through your Christian classes and thinking, oh, yeah, I know that, whatever, whatever. But then, you know, you never actually put it into play. And so even this, I know I'm reading this book and I'm filling out, I'm doing this book report and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know this. And then you get there and you're like, whoa, whoa, I've never had to do this before. And you're like, well, of course you would know how to do it. But the reality of being there is so different than what you're going to put on paper and what you're reading. And you're like, wow, I actually get to use all of these classes worth of information that I've been learning. And I think that's just a wonderful opportunity and something that a lot of people don't get. And you get to take what you're learning and actually see it firsthand. And it's heartbreaking and it's wonderful. And I am a crier. I'm so sorry. I will cry. But I'm sitting there on my first time and it's so brand new. And if it's new for me, I can't imagine how new it is for everybody else. And I'm, you know, I'm there and there's people going around me and we're, you know, we're together and I know and I have my friends there. And so I'm a little bit comfortable, but it's still new and I'm waiting and I'm nervous. And, you know, we're sitting in this Bible and they're like, split up. And I'm like, oh, I have to sit by myself. I'm alone. And I sit there and there's somebody two seats away from me and they're talking to the person next to them. And they said, where are you from? And they start talking and I'm sitting there and I'm like, just listening, because what else am I supposed to do? And I hear her go, oh yes, because I'm here because my country was destroyed. How much gratitude you feel. And you didn't even consider that feeling before you go. I mean, you can't. But I was naive. So getting to experience just that, it's just amazing. And I have so much gratitude. And I wrote in my paper the other day that I felt embarrassed for saying that I was from Dallas because everyone around me is struggling. And then I said, maybe it's not embarrassment, maybe it's gratitude. Gratitude that I get to go home. My family lives an hour away. I have a job. So what this experience has done is it's changed my perspective of everybody around me, that everybody has something going on and that the things in your life there's so much to praise God for. So I think that's one of my main things. Sorry for getting so emotional, but I volunteer in the level 4 adults class, and it's just been amazing. I know that there's people who also go who get more of the starter development of their English skill. I have more of their established English skill, so I like to say that I'm even learning grammar, English grammar in that class.
Me too. I'm still working on it.
Yes. And I was like, wow, I hope the teacher doesn't ask me because that's going to be embarrassing. I don't know what that is. But it clicks. And I just realized that I've never had to look at English the way that other people do. And it's given me gratitude for other things. I'm in Hebrew right now. Mm. And I'm learning a new language. And that is just for a credit. That is just for my degree program. It is not for my essential living. And I can only imagine how hard it is for me to learn that, how hard it is for them, and that's essential to them. So there's been a lot of things that have shaped just my understanding throughout this entire process, especially being at Criswell, that I never thought would apply to the situation that I am in right now. So
yeah. One thing I like that you brought out there, and I think Cameron and I have both felt this in different scenarios, is like there is, and I don't know if we talk about this enough, like there is an uncomfortability of serving. Like you have to break your plans sometimes. Like
on many levels uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know sometimes when we're I think I mentioned in survey, and we're like, this will happen this week because we're getting to the Good Samaritan. And like we have all these reasons, like if you went to a seminary class, they would give you all the reasons, like the priest and the Levite missed like what was happening from. But one of the reasons was they had somewhere else to be. Like when you just get down to it, even beyond the, like they had somewhere to be. And because they had plans to be somewhere, they missed what God had put right in front of them. And that is, like you said, that's the danger of plans. But there's also the uncomfortability of like going somewhere for your first time where you don't know anybody. And like in a class, it makes it a little easier, but it doesn't make it that much easier. And like, I think sometimes, you know, Haas was talking about like global learning and service and that. Sometimes almost like an international mission trip makes it easier because you're like prepared for it to be so kind of different. But Richardson's not that different from Dallas when you get down to it. But you walk into this environment and it's like there's some social anxiety and there's like, should I be doing this? And there's like this like hump you have to get over with really anything. Like I used to do college ministry over at SMU when I was in seminary. And at the time, which is funny now what I do, but like at the time I was like in my late 20s, I'm like, why am I hanging out with people who are like in their early 20s? Like, shouldn't I have moved on from this? And clearly I just never have. But there's like this kind of like, am I really like, is this the place I'm supposed to be? But the beautiful thing with the ministry y'all are doing is they feel that way too, you know? And so I think it creates this bridge or this connection sometimes to like, just realizing like the point of life is not to always feel comfortable. The point of life is to experience life and like see the things that are in front of you. Yeah. And so Cameron, I'm curious too, like you kind of gave us the overview of like how you transitioned there, but I'm curious in the time period where it first kind of clicked to you, well, maybe I'm not going to follow the path to, I assume like, step by step to mega church pastor or whatever.
And it's like, a track. Like they don't call it that in seminary, it but is it's a track. A track.
It's a track. And like everybody kind of knows it's, and it's not like there's that track, but all of us have a track.
Right.
You know, like even relationships, it's like you date and then you marry and then maybe you like get a house and then maybe you get a pet to make sure that's not going to die, or maybe even a plant first and then the pet and then the kid.
We have a picture. Maybe another kid. We have a picture of what it should be.
And this is like the track, like you're handed, but the track you're handed is all not always the plan God has for you. So I'm curious when it starts to dawn on you that maybe the track you're on is not the track you want to continue to be on.
Yes.
Because I think that's something we all like struggle with at times. Like, how did you process that?
Yeah. So we deal with this issue a lot because lots of people, because again, we have about 15 to 20 support race staff now, and we use about 100, about 100 weekly volunteers are there. And so a number of people kind of like, how do you know when things need to change? Like, because the other ministry was being successful, just and here's kind of what I've lived by, which I love, because it means I'll always be necessary, and so will you if you adopt it. You don't have to. But mine is there someone better who can do this? And if the answer is no, then it's you. Like, so is there, because I'm like, I've never taught anyone English in my life, and I don't know grammar. I don't know actually how to teach the alphabet, like A, B, C. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to teach A, B, K. Like, the sounds of the letters, not the letter. Anyway, it's like, I don't know that. And it's like, and so what I've always said is like, as soon as the person more qualified than me shows up, I will happily give the job to them. And until that person is there, it's me and it's you. And so that's the areas to say, like, I know someone else could do things, but for example, when I put in my resignation as associate youth pastor, yep, there was 20 people in line to apply for the job because all the seminary guys and Bible college people, they all needed the part-time youth pastor job. Like, that was the dream job. Uh-huh. And so it's like, okay, well, there's 20 people that want this job. How many people are wanting the support raise to help the refugees job where there's... In our corridor of Dallas, which is where Richardson and Garland and Dallas all come together, that's the area that we're talking about. Some of you may have heard of an area called Vickery Meadows. We're north of there. That got filled up in the late 90s. So pretty much it's like when, and I have so many things to say, I many times forget what I'm saying. But pretty much when the need is there and you're there, that's the way to know that it's time for a change.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, that, like, it sounds easy in retrospect, but it's really difficult
to
know that.
It's very difficult.
And so if you go through that, and sometimes that happens in college, sometimes it happens right after college, but, like, then sometimes it comes back around. Like, that is just kind of life. Yeah. I know a lot of you, when I go out to lunch, if you start asking about, like, the details of how I got to Criswell, it was, like, Criswell is never the plan. It's just, like, a situation plops in front of you and you have to adjust the direction you're going to deal with the actual. And I think one of the things is we like this myth that either we can fit everything into our lives. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a limited amount of time. If you pass up this situation, the situation may not come back again. Like, you have to act on it when you see it in front of you. And then the other thing is just that, is that idea of, like, who else is going to do this? If it's not me, then who is it?
Yeah.
And what I found, like, I knew guys, we both knew guys, in seminary or women in seminary who they would say, this is what I am going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality was they were kind of putting their life on hold because, like, during seminary, because what they were really going to do is they were going to go across the world and they were going to be a missionary somewhere in Africa. Mm. But while they were in seminary, and like, this comes out in your story, it would come out in my story, like, we're in these classes, but we're studying these classes to go serve people in Africa, mm-hmm. but we're not serving people now.
Right.
And the question becomes, you can cross the world, but if you don't figure out how to cross the street, what good is it to cross the world if you're not going to cross the street when you cross the world?
Just to correlate a story with this, we have a number of retired people that volunteer with us, and a number of people say, when I retire, I'm mm-hmm. going to help. Yeah. And what we always say is, if you're not helping before you retire, you're not going to start helping once you retire. Like, whatever you're doing now is how you're going to be.
Yeah. And that is true as teenagers. That's true as college students. Like, you're preparing for something, but are you doing that thing you're preparing for on some level? And maybe it's not even like you have this grand vision to, like, take the track to become the missionary or the pastor or the teacher or the counselor or whatever. Maybe you're just not sure, but are you seeing the things that God is putting in your path today that prepares you for wherever he is actually leading you? And I think that's a huge takeaway here.
Right. As long as you're looking for the need, like, you'll mm-hmm. always be busy. Yeah. You'll always have ministry. And, like, you'll never be doing what you expected as long as you're following the need. And real quick, Haas, you said something great, which was, and that when you're helping, like, refugees, like, it, you see, I spent a long time trying to convince everyone that refugees were the saddest people on earth. But then I found myself being like, I hope they don't visit them because they're going to find out they're not. Like, a lot of them are happy. And so both they have been through transition, just like you said, and it makes you like, is it Michelle? I got the M. And so Madison, just like Madison said, that you're going to go out there and it's going to make you relook at all your issues as maybe being not quite as big as we thought. And then also at the same time, you're going to see joyfulness of people who have literally lost everything. And you're going to be like, wait a minute, I thought it was you get everything and then you have, and then you're happy. And yet now you're seeing the opposite of it. And so it really does have an effect when you're serving those in need. It changes you just in ways you're not expecting.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Okay, so in closing, I want each of you to tell me a short story that has really stuck out for you for your time at For the Nations, either last semester, this semester, or I'm going to time to limit you here, Cameron, to in the last year. Something that just like is really like kind of stuck with you, and you kind of like when you think about your time there, that is like the story from your time. Because I always like to hear like something that's actually happened.
Love it.
But give me the 1 2-minute version of that. Yeah.
So I've only been going for a couple of weeks now, but I think one of the main things that I'll take away, or just a fun story, is that there was a lady in our class, in the class that I serve in, and she's about my age, and just getting to have like a conversation with her. She's in college as well, getting her degree to become a doctor, and I don't know, I think it was just something about being there and being new, but then still finding common ground with everybody. I mean, we talked about college, talked about how hard it is, talked about classes. I mean, so I'm actually excited to go back, and she'll probably be there today and, you know, get to continue our conversations. But yeah, that's one of my main ones here.
Yeah, so when I was working with the kids, there's this a little like toy thing that they have where like, you know, it has a picture of a zebra, so you put this thing in the slot of the zebra or like elephant or things like that. And there's multiple that want to play this with this one thing. And I was kind of helping Miss Erica to be like, hey, you know, just it's your turn is going to be, you know, a little bit. And this kid, his name is Muhammad Ali, literally. And it's cool. And, you know, he's playing with it. Another kid wants to come and play with it. I'm like, oh, just, you know, wait your turn. And it just kind of helped me reflect on, like, am I really patient, you know? Like, I also need to learn how to wait, you know? And so I'm like,
you shoved your way in and took the toy?
Yeah. I took the toy. I was like, my time.
You should see our toys.
Yeah. No, and so it's like, you know, I'm learning with these kids too. And so it's like, just like understanding that you can learn from just about anyone from any age or anything like that. And also walk beside them in learning also. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't always have to be the smartest person in the room. Like, just learn how to be humble and learn with those around you. Because at the end of the day, it's having unity. And last time I checked, unity doesn't include pride. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cameron, you got a story recently?
Yeah. The little girl that was walking down in the first, she was from an Islamic family from Somalia. It's called the Somali Bantu people. At the time, 20 years ago, there was no known Christians in the entire Somali Bantu community. They were all Muslim. Well, we spent a lot of time kind of pouring in with her and her family, but they moved out to Plano, and we were like, boy, that relationship like just kind of ended, and like we did all this stuff, and you thought you'd see change. Well, then about 3 years later, her cousins moved back because they had moved away. And their cousins were like, oh, actually, like from what we heard there and some other Christians we met, like we became Christians. And it was amazing. And they were the first Somali Bantu Christians in the world in this community.
That's amazing.
I know, it was amazing. And yeah. So like we thought it was these people, but it was actually like her cousins. And so then we're like, boy, God, you never know who's going to believe. Well, then, about 2 years ago, Sharifa came back to church with us. She moved back because she finally was able to move out of her parents' house. And what she said, she was like, I always considered myself raised, actually, both in Islam and going to the mosque 3 times a week and Christian. She's like, but now I really want to understand. And so then about a year and a half ago, she goes, okay, that's it. Like, I'm Christian. And so it was 17 years later to the date that she was baptized. And then once she was, she had already believed, like she had been growing in faith, just we hadn't seen her for many, many years. And so then about 6 months later, we had our children's position opened up, and she has a degree in finance, but she's like, I want to pour back into the same people. And so currently, Sharifa runs our children's outreach program.
That's awesome.
And if you, and it's the same little girl that was walking up. And so now she's reaches out to hundreds of people, mm-hmm. both like with help, like of children. She's over the like of helping with homework because she was like, no, this changed my life, and I know what they need. And so now she's teaching the gospel. Yeah. So that's been the last year. So that's always a thing for like if you stick around at a ministry long enough, like mm-hmm. you'll see some really cool things. But it might take 15. Or 20 or yeah. 30 years.
Yeah, been in the long haul too. Let's give it up one more time for Cameron. And of course, I've got sad news. And the sad news is, even though the point of Criswell is really Wednesdays, we have no more Wednesdays until 2026. Now, I will say, if you want to go to Wednesdays in 2026, you should probably like pass your courses this semester. That way you can like be around to come to Wednesdays. But this will be our last Wednesday chapel until January. So I'll be seeing you in 83 days and 23 hours. You're dismissed.